Welcome to the latest episode of Crypto Bites. My name's Zina Sala. I'm in the Regulatory Investigations team in London here at Dentons.
And today I have the real pleasure of speaking with Kellen Armstrong. Kellen is General Counsel and Head of Compliance at Portofino Technologies and previously a partner in Dentons Regulatory and Investigations practice. Kellen, it's a real pleasure to see you again and lovely to have you. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
So Portofino was established in 2021, I believe,
yep.
By two individuals who were formerly at the high frequency trading firm in sort of traditional finance, and you moved across as their head of legal and compliance. Maybe a year ago, maybe 18 months ago?
About 2 years ago, nearly 10 years ago now, yeah.
Time definitely flies. I guess, first of all, how's it been?
It's been great, thank you. Yeah, I'd reached the point in my career when I was looking for a change and going from being a partner at the largest law firm in the world to being the sole lawyer at a crypto trading startup definitely gave me that. And one of the things I like about the role is that regulation is incredibly important in crypto, obviously, and so I can bring my regulatory knowledge as an expert, but also I have everything else. I'm pretty much a jack of all trades, you know, as every sort of in-house sole lawyer is. So it's quite a nice mix in that sense.
Yeah, sounds great. Definitely a bit of baptism of fire, sort of spinning, lots of spinning plates, I'm sure. For those of us sort of listening and that are sort of not very familiar with the company, would you mind giving us a quick 101 of Portofino? What does it do? Who's it designed for? What's its vision?
Sure. So we're a liquidity provider, which mainly means that we trade with our own proprietary capital on exchanges, providing two-way prices, prices and sell prices. And we do that to, obviously, for our purposes, to make money, but also the advantage of that for users of exchanges is that you get much faster markets, much tighter spreads, so you're paying less of a premium, essentially. And that's a good thing for all market participants. So that's our sort of core business. From that base, we're developing other business lines, and probably the most relevant of that is what we call execution services or over-the-counter trading. And this means we trade with institutional clients who want to buy or sell crypto. So typically those clients will want to trade in volume, such that if they just go to the exchange and put in an order, it might move the market against them. So they want to avoid that, and that's why they trade with us. And that's obviously a client-facing business, yeah. So it brings in anti-money laundering regulations, which is probably the key regulatory impact on crypto at the moment. And we have a number of entities that we trade through, and so I've had to get to know and grapple with a number of regulatory regimes throughout the world.
Well, talking about AML, I understand Portofino has recently been registered by the FCA as a crypto asset firm under the money laundering reg. So congratulations.
Thank you.
What was that process like, and what does it mean to Portofino to have sort of achieved this milestone?
Yeah, I mean, the FCA is well known for putting firms that are applying for this through a very testing process. I think probably recognized to be one of the toughest in the world, and I'd say rightly so. It's sort of very understandable they take that view. Their focus is as you'd expect, very much on AML systems and controls, but they also look at other stuff like corporate governance, our oversight of third-party providers, various other sort of ancillary matters like that. I mean, it's not a quick process. There are several rounds of FCA feedback, and you know, we go away and sort of refine our application and change our documents and so on, and then come back. But actually, I always felt that, you know, the FCA was clear in what they needed, and you know, the staff were always professional and cordial throughout the process. And I have heard some horror stories about it, but actually, that wasn't our experience. It was all it was all fine from that perspective.
It's fantastic.
And now we've got the registration. I mean, that's a huge milestone. It obviously opens up London as one of the world's biggest financial centres, but also, again, because the FCA is one of the the foremost global regulators. It really puts Portofino on the map and strengthens our global profile. And again, because it's well known to be a really tough process, it really shows potential clients, both in traditional finance and crypto native clients, that we're committed to really high operating and risk management standards.
Yeah. And I mean, that's fantastic. It sounds like it was an interesting, let's say, process which has gone smoothly. So congratulations again. I think that's great. You talk about operating at the highest standards and ensuring that sort of risk management processes are all in place. And we'll talk a little bit about some of that and regulation a little bit later on in the podcast. But before we dive into that, I just wanted to pause and recognize that a lot has happened in crypto over the last few years, and you have really been at the forefront of that. How have you found that? How have you witnessed the market change over time?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question, because it's been a really crazy 2 years in crypto. Sometimes it seems like it always is, but I mean, the last 2 years have been definitely, you know, we've seen the collapse of Three Arrows Capital, which is the largest crypto hedge fund. That had a knock-on effect on the market, and in particular, most of the large crypto lenders collapsed because of that.
Yeah.
And then we had the biggest of all, the demise of FTX back in November 22. More recently, just before Christmas, we've had the Binance settlement in the US, maybe we'll talk about later. So there's never been a dull moment. And actually, it's kind of remarkable in some senses that the market is still here. And in fact, you know, where we are now is thriving. I mean, it's you know, as you know, prices are at all-time highs. And there's a lot more, there's a lot of renewed interest in the space. So although some of the issues we've had did set back, you know, the growth of adoption, you know, I think the pendulum has well and truly swung back in the other direction now, particularly after the approval of Bitcoin ETFs in the US and the knock-on effects of that.
I mean, I think that's a really, really great point. And as you say, I think we're seeing more enthusiasm generally, but also from what I would term traditional financial services firms and having more institutional involvement, given the area that you're in, that Portofino's in. If we talk about the institutional market, how do you see that developing?
Yeah, there's a few different aspects to this. So I think if we look at traditional financial institutions, many of those are taking crypto increasingly seriously. So one example is asset managers who look at it now as an asset class in its own right. Another is payment institutions who look at stablecoin transfers in particular as an alternative to interbank transfers, especially cross-border. And there are sort of less developed, but still sort of exciting things happening in the tokenization of real world assets. So using blockchain to trade in and transfer things like art, precious metals, real property, things like that, which blockchain could bring a lot of advantages to, without some of the issues around sort of settlement times and putting things in escrow and so on. So that's a really interesting area. And I think the other area where the market is still very undeveloped, but there are signs that it's sort of increasing, is just the use of crypto and blockchain by non-financial companies, simply as a means of payment or as a means of sort of transferring money, you know, again, especially cross-border, because the international banking system is just a really terrible way of moving money cross-border, whereas crypto is much quicker and usually much cheaper.
That technology is definitely a massive bonus, I suppose. This is perhaps flipping to the other side and talking about crypto regulation in general, bringing it into the mainstream, but also recognizing, I think, that most people on the street, if you like, may not understand it. And so it's been viewed as a bit of a risky asset. And whilst those comments largely apply to consumers, do you think there is still a bit of an education on the institutional side that needs to be done, or you sort of do you see that developing as we as it grows, as we've grown?
Yeah, I think it will develop. So I think you can distinguish here between crypto as an asset class for investment purposes, and then some of the other sort of uses of that technology that we've discussed. So as an asset class, I mean, I think most institutional investors, you know, like I'd say most retail investors should probably just hold, you know, a small portion of it as a in the mix, as in a sort of broad-based investment portfolio.
Mm-hmm.
And I think most institutional investors will want to do that. So that's sort of fairly straightforward. And actually, some traditional asset managers are bringing products to market to make this easy. I mean, the Bitcoin ETFs in the States are a very obvious example, but there are others.
Yeah.
And then the wide use of the technology, I think, is still very much in development. And I think there is a sort of educational piece there that's required, because it does need some technical know-how. There are software solutions to make some of it easier.
Mm-hmm.
But I think as an industry, I don't think we've quite cracked it yet.
Okay. And so with that in mind, I suppose, what additional or different risks does the institutional user have to consider as opposed to a, you know, man on the street retail investor?
Yeah, I think probably the main one is custody, because, you know, if you're a retail investor, you know, you perhaps take your chances a little bit more. You know, it's your own money and it's probably not huge amounts. Whereas if you're investing other people's money and or, you know, very large amounts, then custody is a real issue. And obviously, we're used to it in traditional finance firms are used to the way custody works in traditional finance, which is actually rather different to crypto. And there are very large custodian banks who you know, do that. We don't currently, I think, have that level of sort of tried and tested custodian in the crypto space. There are, you know, I think, very good offerings out there from both crypto native firms and from some of the traditional players now. But I think it's still an area where it's probably one of the biggest pain points for a traditional asset manager in particular, sort of coming into the crypto.
Yeah.
And then I think the other thing is that if you're looking at trading a lot, then you do have to think about counterparty risk on whatever exchange you're trading on, which obviously the collapse of FTX made very clear. But that's something that's probably less relevant to most firms, I think, because they won't be sort of trading in and out, or they won't be keeping assets on the exchange a lot, or they'll be using a third party like us.
Yeah. I mean, we'll probably talk about custody for a little while, maybe it's for another podcast, but you touched on sort of counterparty risk and FTX in particular. I suppose I just want to move on to enforcement and what we've seen enforcement in crypto so far. It's from a regulatory perspective in the UK, it's largely unregulated except in relation to the money laundering requirements. And so as a result, we haven't really seen much enforcement in the UK. You know, regulators can't enforce what's not in force. And sort of if you look across the pond, there's probably been a different tactic, I suppose, taken in the US. And they've taken a one at a time, sort of one and done enforcement actions under existing laws against wire fraud, insider trading, as a way to set crypto regulatory policy. I'm sure that you have naturally been watching with interest, and I'm sure your clients have as well. I'd be interested to understand sort of what you've observed being on that side of the fence rather than on my side of the fence.
Yeah, well, I think the biggest effect we've observed from that different approach, if you like, in the US is that quite a few firms, you know, very large traditional firms who were in the crypto space have pulled out for now because of US regulatory risk.
Okay.
And to some extent, actually, that'd be quite good for European firms like us, you know, being a beneficiary of that move. Although longer term, you know, we do want to see the US crypto space thrive because it's such a huge market, obviously. It's such a huge part of the global market. But, you know, as regards this sort of enforcement side, I mean, I think there is a difference between AML enforcement and securities regulation. So Binance, the action against Binance is obviously something that it could happen in the UK. Mm-hmm. You know, the FCA could take that sort of action if they saw the same kind of issue with a firm they regulated. But some of the SEC actions, for instance, are much more it's much more questionable whether that would work in the UK. Mm-hmm. Let's put it that way. I think it's questionable whether it works in the US, but and that's going through the courts at the moment. Mm. But I think the definitions of what are regulated financial investments are actually clearer in the UK and Europe than they are in the US, and that sort of leaves the FCA less room to manoeuvre.
Mm. I mean, it's interesting just to pick up on one point that you said around sort of style and approach and the SEC's style and what could potentially happen in the UK. Like you say, the UK could potentially do something. Do you think there's a chance that they would take that sort of SEC style approach? Or
I mean, I think there is.
Yeah.
I guess it partly depends on whether there's a specific issue. You know, let's say a big firm that is involved in obvious wrongdoing, and secondly, whether that firm, you know, what their regulatory sort of tools are, if you like, their regulatory oversight are of that firm. So if it was a, you know, let's say it was a registered UK firm, and if, you know, there was some major AML issue, then for sure they would, I'm sure the FCA would take action. Where it's a sort of international firm, maybe with some overlap with the UK, and the issues are, you know, not AML issues, then it's probably a bit more open to question about what is the actual tools are. And as you say, some of the US regulators have really sort of pushed the envelope a bit in terms of interpreting existing laws to crypto. And there's probably less scope for the FCA to do that. But, you know, that doesn't mean they couldn't do it.
I completely agree, Kellen. And I think when you also look at the wider UK regulatory framework and what that might potentially look like, it would be really interesting to see that. We've obviously got a number of outstanding Treasury consultations at play that we'll hopefully see during the course of this year. And I'd be really interested to understand or to get some insight from you as to what you, with your Portofino hat on, wants to see in terms of the outcome of that.
So we have the Treasury consultation, the main one on the sort of broad-based regulatory framework for crypto, I guess, last year, and the, in fact, we had responded, and also we contributed to the Crypto UK response, and the outcome of the consultation was broadly as expected. Exactly when that happened, that's brought in, obviously, is a kind of an open question. I think the Treasury have said they want to do the stablecoin legislation this year, but that's in effect everyone.
Yeah.
And the wider piece is unlikely to be this Parliament, which obviously brings in the question of might be a new government in place, will they carry on? And, you know, I suppose all I'd say is I hope they do, actually, because I think the consultation was a sensible basis for having a firm and robust but reasonably sensible and proportionate regulatory framework for crypto in the UK. So I think it's a good starting place. A lot will depend actually on how the FCA then interprets it and makes its rules and then enforces those rules. But I think it's a reasonable, reasonable basis to start from. And I think, I hope that whichever government is in power does bring in something like that.
Mm. Well, fingers crossed, and watch this space, I suppose. Mm. Kellen, thank you very much for joining us today. It's been incredibly insightful.
Thank you very much.